So this morning we're going to return back or reflect on the practice from the morning yesterday and working more with metta and what I would call embodied metta. So how do we embody this experience, this practice, this not really an object per se, so maybe not as easy as just returning to breathing, but this sensibility, intuition, sense of kindness, and these teachings that are central, really central teachings to the Dharma of these Brahma Viharas, these divine abodes, this way of coming home, really, coming home to ourselves, coming home to the body, coming home to present time, and just this constant sense of returning back to this innate sense of goodness, these qualities that have been installed on our hard drive, I believe, but sometimes they get covered up or they get distorted over time, over years, over a wide range of experiences, and sometimes we have a hard time having this homecoming back to this experience of kindness. So as we learn to practice in this way or train in this way, we can find there's a number of ways in which we can use this anchoring. And so we'll expand a little bit further to really embody, which is really kind of bringing a more wide, a more sustained awareness into the body. And that these emotions, sometimes these Brahma Viharas can be summed up or called beautiful spiritual emotions. I'll talk about those tonight, but they're kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, empathetic joy or appreciation, or I would really say gratitude, you could say, is part of that. And then equanimity, which is a really beautiful concept and a very beautiful term, but not an everyday word that we would use, unfortunately. There's no real English word. Equanimity comes from this Pali word, upekkha, which is really the full arrival of the heart into this, a perspective, a way of seeing that, yeah, life is complex and life is mysterious and there's lots of unknowns and we don't always get what we want and sometimes we get what we don't want, and understanding that life is both joyful and sorrowful, and that's going to kind of keep happening. And there's so that's the wisdom aspect of it, is to just kind of recognize and to know and to have the wisdom of understanding that this is going to be, this life thing is very complex. And the other half of equanimity is in these metta practices, is that there's an appropriate response that we can learn how to meet each moment's experience with an appropriate response. And metta being the seed of all the Brahma Viharas, being the seed. And what grows out of that seed is compassion. And compassion is this ability to care about the sorrow, to care about the loss and the difficulty and the pain. And it's wide, wide range. There's a wide range of that experience. I'm sure you realize that, right? And out of that seed grows this sense of compassion, a sense of caring, and also out of that seed of metta grows this ability to appreciate that which is good, to not overlook that. We overlook that also, and we tend to take for granted all of the goodness and all of the success and all of our accomplishments and all of the ways in which we've been good to ourselves and take care of ourselves, and we don't usually stop and go, oh yeah, oh great, so good. We're like, oh, where's the better? I need to do better. I'm not doing good enough. And we are currently, I believe, plagued with this epidemic of not enough. I'm not enough. I don't have enough of this. I don't have enough of time. I don't have enough of money. I don't have enough of friends. I don't have enough of metta. I don't have enough of mindfulness. This kind of scarcity culture that we live in now, which is very contagious, I think. I think there's a contagiousness. I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and nowhere in the universe that I have ever been do you see this scarcity culture more so than the city of Los Angeles. If you think you want to move to the country, just go live in LA for 2 years. And you will completely leave and go to the country, I promise. So metta is it holds all of these qualities, but it's really the seed of that. And one thing about metta that's good is it really it really destroys, to some degree, and that might be a strong word, it destroys fear and doubt and hatred, that kind of anger, resentment. It gets to the root of those kind of experiences. And it allows us to start to lean in that kind of that better direction. That sense of goodness and kindness that undermines all those habits. And those habits are really defensive habits, I think. Fear. That sort of, really all these habits that start the moment we don't feel safe. I don't feel safe, I get scared. I don't feel safe, I get scared. I get scared of what? Oh my God, what if? Take that ball and run with it. What if? And then the mind proliferates and creates all these mansions of fear and all these ways in which we start to predict, control, assess all of the ways in which things aren't going to be okay. And then what I need to do to problem solve, to create a system so that I don't get hurt. Fear, of course, very primal. Understood evolutionary is probably the first emotion that we had. That's probably the oldest, most prehistoric emotion, numero uno, would be fear. And of course, we don't want to think that we need to get rid of our fear, because fear is actually quite useful. But we can notice at times we probably have a destructive relationship to fear. It gets really big, really fast. And that sense of fear, that sense of not feeling safe, expands. And then I can become defensive. And I can become angry. I can become hateful at the source of the fear. Who made me have this fear? I was in a, some of you probably know, a little over a year ago, I was in a really terrible motorcycle accident in Los Angeles, and I almost died. And I was in the hospital for a long time. And then about 6 weeks after that, when I sort of was doing my rehabilitation, and I remember driving for the first time in my Honda Civic, which is basically a motorcycle with four wheels. I remember I had this fantasy for a while. I was like, I'm getting an Escalade. Like, I'm spending all my money. I'm getting the safest. Especially driving in Los Angeles. I don't know if you've ever driven a car in Los Angeles. It's literally insanity. And I was just scared every time I got in my car. And I would notice this, like, you know, someone would come up, I'd see something in the rearview mirror kind of come up on my tail, and I would get, you know, I would get really angry. And then if I would stop, I would kind of recognize, oh, actually, no, I get scared first. And then I get angry at the source of what's made me scared. And then I want to have ill will towards that. So I'd like want to chase the person down and see his face. Who is this person who did this thing? And then this hatred and this ill will, and to some degree, almost even a sense of violence, of wanting to destroy the source of the thing that made me have the fear and made me feel unsafe, which is why we kill the mosquito or want to kill the bee. The bee is not going to really hurt you that bad, but getting stung by a bee kind of sucks. Somebody here got stung by a bee. It's not pleasant. Yeah. But it's fear. And so when we look at metta and the way that it was prescribed, or the reason the Buddha spoke about metta, the historic story was that there was a bunch of his students or a bunch of monks and people who were meditating in the forest. And they were just really scared of all the tree spirits and the evil spirits in the forest, or perhaps they were just maybe scared of the dark and probably had these crazy stories about evil tree spirits. And they came to the Buddha and said, we can't practice because we're so scared. And he told them they should practice metta. And metta is a way of getting at the fear, allowing us to feel safe, which I know can be kind of a problematic word for some of us. Safe enough, maybe. I feel safe enough that I can sit here and close my eyes. And it's a sense, actually, really, for me, it really is about coming home to my present time embodied experience. Oh, it's okay to be here. I love this idea of home, of being home. Even that can maybe be troubling for some of us, but I know that after a long trip or being gone for a while, when I get home, I get that, so good to be home. My stuff, my things, my bed. Right? So how can we create practice, experience embodied metta, where we, when we sit and when we practice, we arrive into a feeling or a sense of it being home. This is where we are. Right? Not dependent. Independent of the world and not needing anything extra. Just, this is good, this is enough. I don't need anything. I just need to kind of embody that experience of home or of metta. And we don't get that fear or that resentment or that ill will or that craving, that reactivity that kind of gets us going. I don't feel safe, I need something, I gotta do something, I gotta have something, gotta be something. And this kind of perception that I'm not okay, it's not okay, it's not going to be okay. And that activation, that dukkha sankhara, that old sense of fear or old sense of woundedness that re-arises and tells us, oh no, this is what if? What if they don't ring the bell? I'm going to sit here all day. Right. It's happened to me on retreat. If there was nobody to ring the bell, I would like sit there and be like, there's nobody to ring the bell. I mean, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. Fear, panic. Right. The mind proliferates, or this word the Buddha uses called papancha, which is a mental proliferation, which is really the exaggerated state of that fear. You ever notice how exaggerated your fear gets? I'm going to be in this room for eternity if they don't come and ring that bell. This is the worst thing in the universe. We become uneasy. And the hard part about the practice, of course, is that sometimes we are sitting with experiences that are very difficult to be with. Things aren't always easy, which is why I always try to let people know that metta is not about trying to make things easy, but it's the relationship that we have with each moment's experience. And so embodied metta is a way of integrating the body. So there's the body. We'll work with the body today and have some mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of breathing. Some people mentioned that yesterday as kind of being a core practice. But there's a way where you can really use foundational practices. So the first foundation of mindfulness is really mindfulness of the body. It's that foundation of awareness, which we build upon. And that's so pragmatic because the body is always right here, right now. The body doesn't plan, the body doesn't remember, the body doesn't predict, the body just does the body sensation. I also, in my analysis or teaching of the body, use a wider set of body. So there's the body, there's breathing. You can use breathing, you don't have to use breathing. You can use breathing in a wide range of ways, at the nostril, the chest, the belly. The anchor that I'll offer today that I've used for 2 decades is this area from the heart center across the shoulders and in metta, body, breath, metta, a three-pointed anchor. May I be at ease, feeling lifting, rising, falling, which is the very classic Sayadaws of Burma. This way they practice is this rising, falling, all things rise and pass away. All things rise and pass away. The breath rises and passes away. So training the whole system to get on board with reality, a lot of wisdom in that rising, falling, being at ease with the rising and the falling and the rising and the falling. So you have the body, you have the breath, you have the metta, all right here in this region. Also not classically taught, but I do believe that sound is a very great anchor and ground in embodied practice. Usually the sense gates are taught in the 4th foundation of mindfulness, but I have my skepticism about the way the Satipatthana has been structured, but that's a whole nother talk. But really the analysis of the Buddhist psychological worldview is a phenomenological psychology, and ears is the body. Ear, object, hearing. Hearing consciousness, sound consciousness, is present time awareness. You can't hear the bell now. It's gone. So hearing is a very pragmatic way to allow you to sustain your awareness into presence, into a sense of home, into a sense of here. And I like it because it gives me a sense of with. For me, a lot of times in meditation, I can feel it with my eyes closed and coming into my breath. I can feel this internal pressure of kind of meditator's claustrophobia, where I feel inward and tight and rigid and I'm just like, ugh. But no. Opening and letting my ears and my sound see if I can capture the sound that's furthest away from us right now. I can hear that river somewhere down there, and that gives me a sense of width and a sense of openness. And I used those instructions yesterday that I practiced with Ajahn Sucitto, of this wide and soft. So wide awareness, open awareness, sound. Letting the mind go out. How big can the mind get? And then how soft? Breathing. The breathing is not rigid. Breathing is very soft. The in-breath is very soft. As you breathe in, it's very soft. The heart is very soft. Metta is soft and gentle and at ease. And the breathing is like that. Thinking, very rigid. Thinking is like one of those typewriters from the 50s. Right? Do this, do that, don't do this, do that, why'd you do this, why'd you do that, how come you came here, what are you thinking, what's going on, what are you going to do about it, the knee hurts, but it's bad news. So noticing the rigidity, the tightness, the calculation, the driving nature, not wide, it's actually narrow, it's tight. It's not particularly soft. Maybe it is soft at times. We can have a softness of thinking. But I find that afflictive thinking, or thinking that is of a sort of stressful nature, that has a kind of calculated, controlling, craving, judgmental, critical. I call it the internal sports caster, who's giving me the play-by-play analysis of how my meditation is going. It's like, well, dude, you know, you've kind of been at this for a while, and I think you're getting actually worse. I mean, it's like the second day, and you're just like, you can't breathe. You know, it's just that kind of, you know, that assessment. And so when we look at meditation practice, when we look at kind of what we're trying to do is, and again, I don't like this word meditation, but I find myself stuck using it. This cultivation of awareness, cultivation of presence, cultivation of kindness and goodness is a cultivation. But we have to be very careful that we keep an eye on the assessment. So am I cultivating awareness? Am I cultivating kindness? Or am I assessing my experience? Am I evaluating? Am I cultivating or am I evaluating? And I find much of the time I'm evaluating. I'm like, well, my mind's pointing out all the subtle aspects of the experience that aren't quite going right. Not so good over here. And it stopped raining, but it's kind of cold. And that kind of, right? You know that? Sort of nagging, critical. And then that is always the prompting of looking for the other or the better. So we try to train or bring our awareness and bring our attention into the lowest common denominator of our experience as we can. Pulling out of the abstract and if and out of the what-if-ing and the if-only-ing and the imaginative, but right back into the most basic features of consciousness itself. The sensation of the in-breath is a very basic feature. It's a very, finding home in your breathing is also quite good because if there's one thing you've done, in every moment of your life, your breath has been there for you. Regardless, through the good times, the bad times, you always have this autonomic system of breathing. So there's something about it that's familiar, something about it that perhaps feels ancient. Just like all the other senses, the colors, the sounds. So anything that we can do to capture attention and bring it into any fabric of experience that's really, really like right here, right now, it gives us a more liberal way so that we're not trying to just do the one thing of just like that myopic concentration, which is also okay, but is not necessarily a liberation practice. It's just gaining some concentration so that we can do something like mindfulness or vipassana. So when people spend days and days and days developing concentration, it can be very activating. And we also can gain focus and concentration, or really continuity of awareness is what we're looking for, the continuity of presence and ease. So a continuity of being present, being with what's here, being at ease with what's here. Continuity, presence, ease, continuity, presence, and just like that becomes the arising of this mindfulness, this ability to be aware, to recognize, to be present, and to see what it is that is pulling you out of your present time experience into some abstract idea of how things could be better, different, and how you would be a person who would be better and different if only these other conditions were happening, but they're not happening. So the instructions this morning will be more or less similar to what we did yesterday. We have these 2 full days of this Metta Vipassana, so a lot of times I like to present some of these ideas and revisit them and present them and revisit them. And essentially that's what your Dharma practice will look like over years. If you learn something, something gets presented, you explore it, and you're always coming back to these basic ideas. And so coming back to the mental training or the pragmatic framework for practice is what is it that I can be with right now? So that's kind of what we'll explore in this embodied metta. What is it that I have the capacity to be with? Can I be with my body? I can be with my shoulders. Right, what can I be with that seems stable? I can be with my breath. I can be with the sound of that river. I can be with the temperature in the room. Oh, there's actually quite a few things I can be with right now. That's good. Be with that. What can I be with? And how am I with that? And if I can be with it, the how of it becomes much easier. It's like, oh, I can be at ease with the sound of that river. I can be at ease with the rise and fall of the in and out breath. I can be at ease with the temperature in the room. My legs are a little sore here. I don't really want to be with that, but I can. So I'll recognize that, but I'll actually let my awareness kind of go into the field of experience that has I have more capacity. And that's that sense of home or that sense of metta. There's no fear in that. If I can be with something, if I have a capacity to be present with, then the fear activator is very unlikely to arise. There's a stability of mind, a calmness of mind. And then from that ground or from that anchor or from that embodiment, I'm much more able to practice in a way that feels beneficial. It feels like it's moving ahead. And so in each moment, we can kind of look at exploring where we can be with experience, where's my capacity to be with this, being with that part of experience. And then watching when you get pulled into something else and just all this constant coming back home. Home base, you could say the anchor is the home base. Where's your home base? And so if we're standing on solid ground, if we're practicing from a home base that is has a capacity to be present and has a capacity to be at ease, then we can explore all these different things that arise and come and go, because there's always a way to return. And we don't want to find ourselves in this, you know, unsafe fear, because then the mind has nowhere to land. Where can the mind land? Where can contact be made that is stable and easeful? And that's what this embodied metta is stabilizing the mind or stabilizing the attention into that. And then letting go of what, you know, and then watching out for what it is you want to explore or find out. It's just like, that's a resting place. Where can the mind rest? And then watch. Practicing from that place. Instead of looking for the better place to be, to have, to get, to become. So as we move into some guided practice, if you want to take a minute or two to stand and let the body, noticing the ease perhaps of standing, you might find the body appreciates that opportunity to stretch. And just finding or returning back to a seated position that feels supportive, that feels like it's good enough, and really trying to find a way to sit or hold the body where there's a capacity, you feel like you have a capacity to to be with that experience. And so just beginning by creating a foundation for the mind, a way of being, a sense of being at home, present. And just starting by bringing awareness to sound. And noticing that you don't have to do the hearing, it just arises. And see if your awareness can rest in this wide, expansive mind, hearing sound, past the sound of the bell, out into the forest, the river rolling over the rocks, just beginning to discern for yourself if your capacity to be with sound is easy. Is that experience easy to be with? It's easy to be with the sounds. Then just be with the sound. And allowing sound to be present in your experience. And exploring, bringing contact to the in-breath. Connecting and sustaining your attention all the way through the full length of the in-breath, breathing in. Breathing out. And just discerning your own capacity to be with the breath, if that feels like you're able to do that. Including that into your embodied practice, present time. If that doesn't feel right or easy, you go back to sound or back to the body. And then bringing a global awareness to the body as a single global sensation, simply by recognizing the temperature, feeling the air on your skin, contact, feeling the coolness. Feeling the clothes on your body, warmth. Getting a sense for all of the space around the body, feeling into the space in front of you, openness, the space behind you. To the left and to the right. The gravity of the body, the weight of the body in the chair, the cushion. And calling to mind, calling to body, this metta, this wishing well, in gladness and safety, may I be at ease in this body. May I be at ease in this body. And then simply opening or returning towards whatever your capacity is. What can you be with right now? Sound, breathing, temperature, gravity. Where can you hold your attention? Just trust your own experience. Being present with what you can and being at ease. And coming back into any sense of being at home here. And just being with yourself. I'm with you. I got you. Just continuing to practice presence and ease. What can I be with right now? Be with what I can be with. And in that space of presence, bringing ease, acceptance, kindness. Just like checking into your experience right now. How is it right now? Staying out of the abstract mind and being back home here in the present and just seeing what can I be with right now? Being here with and at ease with. Just pouring your awareness into this present experience, into whatever is available that you can be with. If it's sound, your breathing, the air on your skin, it doesn't matter. No longer willing to abandon ourselves to some imagination destination. Continuing to wake up from wherever you have been pulled into, back here, and building a home in this present time, and just looking, what is it that you can be with here now? Is it sound? Is it breathing? The body, temperature, this feeling, sense of goodness and kindness. What you can be with might change, and that's okay. But constantly looking for that home base, that sense of ground, presence and ease, wherever it can be found. Not in the past, not in the future, not in the abstract, but here in this room, and this forest. Just sitting here for the last few minutes of the practice, continuing to explore what is it that I can be with here? Where can I land? And sound, hearing, breathing, the presence and weight of the body, the contact of the air on my skin, this inner feeling, attitude of kindness and safety. Not abandoning ourselves to fixing or controlling, predicting, forecasting. Let that go.